नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Today we are reading from Canto 3, Chapter 30. Chapter 30 is entitled Description of Adverse Fruitive Activities, and today we are on verse 31. Eka prapadyante dvantam. Eka prapadyate dvantam. Hitvedam svakalevaram. Hitvedam svakalevaram. Kushaletara patheyo. Kushaletara patheyo. Bhutadrohena yadbritam. Bhutadrohena yadbhritam. Eka prapadyate dvantam. Hitvedam svakalevaram. Kushaletara patheyo. Bhutadrohena yadbhritam. Eka prapadyate dvantam. Hitvedam svakalevaram. Kushaletara patheyo. Bhutadrohena yadbhritam. Ekaha. Alone. Prapadyate. He enters. Dvantam, darkness. Hitva, after quitting. Idam, this. Sva, his. Kalevaram, body. Kushala itara, sin. Patheyaha, his passage money. Bhuta, to other living entities. Drohena, by injury. Yat, which body, Britam, was maintained. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. Translation. He alone goes to the darkest region of hell after quitting the present body, and the money he acquired by envying other living entities is the passage money with which he leaves this world. Purport. When a man earns money by unfair means and maintains his family and himself with that money, the money is enjoyed by many members of the family, but he alone goes to hell. A person who enjoys life by earning money or by envying another's life and who enjoys with family and friends will have to enjoy alone the resultant sinful reactions accrued from such violent and illicit life. For example, if a man secures some money by killing someone and with that money maintains his family, those who enjoy the black money earned by him are also partially responsible and are also sent to hell. But he who is the leader is especially punished. The result of material enjoyment is that one takes with him the sinful reaction only and not the money. The money he earned is left in this world and he takes only the reaction. In this world also, if a person acquires some money by murdering someone, the family is not hanged, although its members are sinfully contaminated. But the man who commits the murder and maintains his family is himself hanged as a murderer. The direct offender is more responsible for sinful activities than the indirect enjoyer. The great learned scholar Chanakya Pandit says, therefore, that whatever one has in his possession had better be spent for the cause of Sat, or the Supreme Personality of Godhead, because one cannot take his possessions with him. They remain here and they will be lost. Either we leave the money or the money leaves us, but we will be separated. The best use of money, as long as it is within our possession, is to spread it to acquire Krishna consciousness. Om Agyanatimirandhasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam Mukam Karoti Vachalam Pangum Langayate Girim Yat Kripatamaham Vande Shri Guru Dinatarinam Vanchakalpatarubhyascha Kripasindubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna. So in this chapter, in this section, the verse that we are studying today, Kapila Dev is continuing his instructions to Mother Devahuti on the reactions that a person gets by doing adverse fruitive activities. So as we know from the Bhagavad Gita, there are three types of activities that a person can perform in this particular world. The earthly planetary systems are called as Karma Bhumi. Karma Bhumi means where a person can either acquire good karma, bad karma. So this is called as Karma Bhumi. And there are three types of activities or karma a person can accrue while doing his activities in this material world. So these three types of karmas are Sukarma, which are called as good or pious activities. The second category is Vikarma. Vikarma means impious activities. And the third category is Akarma, which is activities which are performed for the pleasure of the Lord, and therefore they are called as transcendental activities. So Sukarma are activities which are done by people who are generally pious, who actually have morality in their heart, who have some values in the heart, who also might follow some scriptural injunctions, and therefore they follow all these codes of living, good codes of living in this material world. And they perform activities, welfare for the welfare of mankind, or they perform activities which might be pious activities like yajnas and all these sorts of things. So people who perform these activities, who fall in this category, but who are pious as well, who believe in higher authority, who believe that there is someone called as God, such type of people are actually sent to heavenly planets. So although they do lots of pious activities, obviously, they still cannot go out of the material world. They are still within the realm of this material world. But because they are pious at heart, they are believers. They know there is a higher authority who is supplying the necessities in this world. They may not be clear who the Supreme Personality of Godhead is, but they believe in God. They might be demigod worshippers, but they have done lots of pious activities. And such people are promoted to the heavenly planets. So they are called as Mishra Bhaktas. So Mishra Bhaktas means they are doing pious activities, but they also have this tendency to do their own sense enjoyment. Or they might be doing pious activities, like we see so many yajnas are done in the world, like Mrityunjay yajnas, and for health and wealth some yajnas are performed. So the end result might be that they also want to have a good life in this material world, but still they are doing pious activities. They are doing something for the welfare of mankind. They are doing something which is there in the scriptures. So these people fall under the category of performing Sukarma, but with piety in their heart, and therefore they are promoted to the heavenly planets. And then there are people who perform Vikarma. So people who perform Vikarma and who absolutely have nothing to do with God, their only motive in life is sense enjoyment, but sense enjoyment at the cost of others, or at the cost of harming others. So they might not hesitate to plunder others, they might not hesitate to steal, they might not hesitate to kill to satisfy their belly, which is meat eating. They might not hesitate to acquire money by unfair means, what we call as gambling or black money. So Prabhupada is describing in this purport that these are the people who have either envied others' lifestyle And they also wanted a good lifestyle, so they resorted to any means that they wanted to get that sort of money, or they perform lots of abominable activities. And Kapila Dev says that the reaction of such adverse fruitive activities is that they are sent to the hellish planets. So there are four categories in this material world. There are the heavenly planets, where, as I mentioned, people who perform sukarma but who have some piety at heart, they are promoted to the heavenly planets. Then there is the earthly planetary system, which is karma bhumi, where we perform a karma. Then below the earthly planetary systems is Bila Svarga. Bila Svarga is also heavenly planets, but they are called as subterranean heavenly planets. So there is actually, it is mentioned in the Bhagavatam, a description of the Bila Svarga planets is also given. And it seems that in the Bila Svarga planet, sometimes the enjoyment is much higher than actually the heavenly planets which are above the earth. So which category of people go there? Who is given this Bila Svarga destination? So people who did pious activities, like who performed lots of charitable activities for the welfare of mankind, but they are atheists. They have nothing to do with the Lord. They don't believe that there is a supreme power. But we see in this world also today, there are many people who fall in this category, who are very good at heart. They will perform lots of activities. They might open some old age homes. They might open anath ashrams, like place where children who orphanages, where children who have been abandoned or who don't have parents can be brought up. Or they might open big hospitals where medicines are given free of cost or surgeries are done free of cost. So there are many people who do all these pious activities. Like in my office today, many of the people are going to go and sleep at the MCG. And this is just to create awareness about homelessness in Melbourne. So they are all, many of my office colleagues are going to go in the evening and sleep in MCG. Like MCG has opened their grounds for performing this activity. And everyone's going to sleep there in the open, just as homeless people would sleep. Just to get an experience and to spread awareness what homeless people are going through. And they came and collected donations from everybody in the office. And there were big posters which were put around, that please donate for this good cause, please donate for this good cause. So yes, it is a good activity they are doing. They are doing something for the homeless people. But not most of them are atheists. We know that Westerners, you know, most of them either don't believe in God or have nothing to do with God. So there are people who accrue lots of these pious activities, but they don't believe in a higher authority. And such people are actually sent to the subterranean heavenly planets, or the Bila Svarga. So the difference between the heavenly planets, where all the demigods reside, and Indra is the king of the heavenly planets, and the subterranean heavenly planets, is that at least in the heavenly planets, there is remembrance of God. So although the enjoyment is almost equal, or the subterranean heavenly planets might have better enjoyment, but still in the heavenly planets, there is remembrance of God. There is piety. They believe that the demigods are also living there. So they believe that there is a higher authority, there is a supreme personality of Godhead. But they are Mishra Bhaktas, like we see in Indra's case. He is a devotee of the Lord, but he also gets pride. We just studied that pastime in the 10th canto. Because of pride, the whole Govardhan pastime, Krishna had to perform the whole Govardhan pastime to destroy Indra's pride. Or if somebody is doing some yagyas, then he immediately comes, like with Prithu Maharaj, he immediately comes to destroy the yagya because he feels his position is going to be now taken away by that person. So they are karma mishra bhaktas, but they do have devotion for the Lord in their heart. So at least there is remembrance of the Lord, and they don't have complete forgetfulness. They get a chance to elevate their consciousness. But in the subterranean heavenly planets, there is only enjoyment, but there is absolutely no remembrance of the Lord. So a person gets more and more actually entrenched in, you know, gratifying his senses, and more forgetfulness of the Lord comes in his heart. But below that, what Kapila Dev is describing to Devahuti is the hellish planets. So once a jiva quits his body, especially impious jivas who have done lots of adverse fruitive activities or vikarma, he is taken to the planet of Yamaraj. I believe it's called Pitruloka, where the judgment is passed by Yamaraj. And then he is sent, and how the description is given over here in the past few verses, that how the Yamadutas tie him and they drag him through the streets, like, and there is scorching heat over there, and the man is falling down, the jiva is falling down, crying for water. and he's whipped, but he's not even given any water to drink. So all these descriptions are given, and how his flesh is given to somebody else to eat. He's put in fire. Sometimes he has to eat his own flesh. So these are the punishments that that person has to go through who performed vikarma throughout his life. And the sad part is that after he undergoes all this punishment, like Prabhupada was mentioning in one of the earlier text purports, he then has to acquire the body. Prabhupada says he's just getting practice. Like it was said over there that he is also made to eat his own stool and urine and all. So Prabhupada is saying that he's actually given practice to adopt then a body in this world which will then continue, where he will continue to be able to eat stool and flesh and all. So for example, a pig, you know, has no discrimination in what he will eat. He eats stool, he eats meat, everything. A pig, you put anything before him, he will eat. So this is the punishment the jiva goes through in the hellish planets. But again, he is not given a chance to reform. He is then put into a body, an animal's body, which is suitable then to continue that punishment. So the only way that these tendencies can be reformed in the heart is through the process of bhakti. Only bhakti can uproot the tendency to sin from the heart. So punishment cannot uproot the tendency to sin from the heart. And we see that, even in this world we see. Sometimes when rapists or murderers or thieves are put into jail and they have to undergo a harsh punishment in the jail, sometimes they actually become rebellious. And when they come out, they perform the same activity again. And we see this especially in terms of rapists or people who have molested children. That tendency has not gone away from the heart just because they underwent punishment. So same is with the jiva. Even though he was put in the hellish planet, the tendency to sin has not gone away from the heart. And he then gets, you know, sometimes he even gets the tendency to perform more sins. But the only thing which can uproot these tendencies from the heart is actually bhakti. And therefore the Lord, he gives instructions in the Bhagavad Gita. There are also lots of instructions we see in the Bhagavatam. So the Lord comes down as his book Bhagavata, and the Lord also comes down as person Bhagavata. He sends his representatives to give us the knowledge of how these tendency of sinning can be uprooted from the heart through the process of bhakti. He comes down himself to perform pastimes, to attract us back to him into the spiritual world, to make us aware that there is something called as akarma, which a person can perform, by which he can transcend this entire material world. He doesn't have to be in this merry-go-round, sometimes going up, sometimes going down, sometimes going up. He can transcend that and go out of this material world completely. So he sends his representatives, he comes himself, he sends his instructions through the books of Srila Prabhupada. We come to know of all these, the process that we can adopt to uproot the sinful tendencies from our heart. So today is the appearance day and disappearance day of three personalities whom the Lord sent not only to attract us back to him but also to give us instructions on the process of devotional service and how we can come out of this cycle and how we can uproot the tendency of sinning from our heart. So it's the appearance day of Sita Mata, it is also the appearance day of Janva Mata, and it is the disappearance day of Madhu Pandit. So we will spend some time for the remainder of the class talking about these three personalities. It is said that the personalities are very merciful on their appearance days. They shower lots of blessings, and it is very purifying to your glorification of these personalities on their appearance and disappearance days. So we will start with Sita Mata. It's her appearance day today. And Valmiki Muni, who has written the Ramayana, he actually says that Ramayana is not Ramayana. It is actually Sitayanam Charitam Mahat. So he says that Ramayana is actually a book which glorifies or which tells us about the greatness of Sita Mata. Because Ramayana is so much about Sita Mata's sacrifice, about her qualities, about the mood that she adopted to serve her husband. So Valmiki Muni calls Ramayana Sitayanam Charitam Mahat. It gives the glories of the life of Sita Devi. So Sita Devi was actually Vedavati in her previous life. And she was performing intense tapasya in the forest because her sole aim was to get the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu, as her husband. So while she was performing this tapasya and undergoing great austerities, Ravana was passing by from the sky. He had just defeated Kubera and he had acquired that celestial airplane which could fly in the sky. And Ravana being Ravana, he immediately got attracted when he saw Vedavati in the forest alone. because Vedavati was extremely beautiful. So he immediately brought his aeroplane down and he actually tried to touch Vedavati. He had some malicious intentions in his heart and he wanted to molest her and acquire her by force. So as soon as he touched Vedavati, her meditation broke and she became very angry with Ravana because she was doing this intense tapasya to get Vishnu as her husband and Ravana had actually put a spoke in the wheel. He had now broken her meditation and obviously now Vedavati was not going to be able to complete the tapasya that she had in mind to achieve Lord Vishnu. So she becomes very angry and she evokes a fire because she did not want to be touched by any other man other than Vishnu. So she evokes a fire and she burns herself down. But before doing that, she curses Ravana. She curses that because you broke my meditation like this, I will come back again and I will become the cause of your destruction. And she also curses him that next time you try to get a lady by force, your head will split. You will die immediately. So these were the two curses she gives to Ravana and then she gives up her body by evoking a fire. And then in the next lifetime, she is born as Sita Devi. So there is a place called Sita Madi. It is there in Bihar. And Janak Maharaj, who was the king at that time, he was actually digging the ground because he wanted to perform a huge yagya for the welfare of mankind, for the welfare of his citizens. So he was a Raj Rishi. He knew what the goal of life was. So he was, while he was digging this trench, he found a beautiful golden casket. His plow hit a beautiful golden casket. And when he saw that casket, he saw that there was a very beautiful golden baby girl inside that casket. So because Sita Mata was discovered in that trench, which is also called as furrow, and the meaning of furrow in Sanskrit is Sita, so that is why she was named as Sita Devi. So Janak Maharaj was so happy and he takes this baby girl home and gives her to his wife. And then eventually Janak Maharaj, the whole family moves to Janak Nagari. And therefore one of the names of Sita Devi is also Janaki. And that place, the kingdom of Janak Maharaj was also called as Mithila. So one more name of Sita Devi is also Maithili. And one more name of Sita Devi is also Vaidehi because her father's name was Videha. Videha means someone who has been able to transcend bodily conception of life. So these were some of the names of Sita Devi. And Sita Devi is glorified as the epitome of feminine purity and chastity in the Ramayana. And we will discuss some of her glorious qualities as we go on. And because she appeared from the earth, she is also called as the daughter of Bhumi Devi or an expansion of Bhumi Devi. And because Bhumi Devi actually personifies Samruddhi, Samruddhi means auspiciousness or growth. So she is also called as the emblem of auspiciousness or growth or prosperity or abundance of Mother Earth. That is one more representation of Sita Devi. So after Sita Devi was obtained by Janak Maharaj, Janak Maharaj's wife gave birth to one more daughter who was called as Urmila. And he raised both the daughters with lots of love and affection, as you know, princely daughters would be raised. So in her childhood, it is mentioned that Sita Devi used to perform lots of pastimes. She used to enact lots of pastimes of the Lord, same like we hear in the pastimes of Lord Nityananda. And everyone used to be amazed when they used to see Sita Devi enact all these pastimes of different incarnations of the Lord. So people used to ask her, how do you know these pastimes? Just as people used to ask Lord Nityananda. And she would just say that I've witnessed these pastimes in my earlier this thing. So she used to enact all these pastimes and that is how she used to spend her childhood. So once when she was a young girl, Parshuram visited Janak Maharaj. And Parshuram had a huge bow, which was an active bow of Lord Vishnu. So there were two bows of Vishnu. The one which Parshuram carried when he came to meet Janak Maharaj was the active bow. And there was one more bow of Vishnu, which had now been deactivated. And it had been deactivated by Lord Vishnu himself in his war, like in his fight with Lord Shiva. And that bow had been gifted to Janak Maharaj, which was kept in a huge glass case in Janak Maharaj's kingdom. But this bow which Parshuram had brought was still an active bow. But it was again the same as the bow which had been gifted to Janak Maharaj. It was extremely heavy, like more than 300 soldiers were required to lift that bow. So Parshuram leaves that bow outside Janak Maharaj's palace and then he goes inside and has a long conversation with Janak Maharaj. And then when he comes outside, to his amazement, he sees that the bow is missing. So everybody starts searching for the bow because they are surprised who has taken it. So many people are required to carry the bow. And then they see on the terrace of the palace that Sita Mata was playing with this bow. And she's a very young girl. And they see that she's lifting the bow with one hand, putting it this side, and she also has a ball. So her ball has gone inside under the bow. Then she lifts it and puts it on the other side. So like a toy, she was handling the bow. And when Parshuram sees this, he's actually quite utterly astonished when he sees this activity of Sita Mata. So he immediately tells Janak Maharaj, he tells him that your daughter is not an ordinary daughter. This bow requires 300 people to lift it, and that too strong soldiers. But at this young age, while she's a baby, she has been very easily able to lift this bow. So you should get her married to someone who is extremely strong and who is able to match the strength which she has. And then we know the pastime of how the Swayamvar of Sita Mata took place. And in fact, in that Swayamvar, even Ravan comes. And the condition which Janak Maharaj had said that anybody who is able to lift the bow, the inactive bow which had been gifted to him, and they are able to string it, only that person can marry Sita. So even Ravana had tried and he had failed. But then Lord Ram comes, and we know the story of how he easily lifts the bow. He not only strings it, but he breaks it into two. So only he could match whatever Sita Mata had achieved in her childhood. And Sita Mata was very happy to be reunited with her Lord. So that is how their marriage takes place. Now, when Sita Mata comes back, and after a few years, Ram was to be coronated as the king. Even Sita Mata was very happy, and she was also decorating herself like her mother's, because she was going to become the queen the next day. And the whole pastime is there of how Ram had been banished. So Ram comes and gives the news to Sita Mata. And she is quite equipoised when she hears the news. She doesn't become very crestfallen that, oh, now I can't be the queen. Because she was not attached to all these worldly things. So she was saddened by the fact that her lord, who is the most deserving candidate to sit on the throne, has now been unfairly banished. So she was saddened. But she was quite equipoised. And she tells Lord Ram that, okay, I'm going to come with you. And Lord Ram tries to dissuade her with lots of points. And that is a very nice samvad in Ayodhya Kanda of Ramayan between Sita and Ram, where Ram is trying to convince her how she should not come to the forest. And Sita Mata gives very strong arguments why she should be taken to the forest with Lord Ram. So she says that when I married you, and you know in Hindu culture or in Vedic culture, we see that when marriages take place, so Agni is the witness to the marriage, and there are some vows which a husband and wife take. So she says that there is a vow I had taken that I will be by your side no matter whether there is happiness or distress in your life. I will always support you through every phase of life. So how can I now abandon you when you have to go to the forest, and how can I stay alone here in this palace enjoying myself? And then she says a second point. She says that, and anyway, even if I live over here, for me, wherever you are, my lord, that is actually Ayodhya. That is a place of opulence. So if I come to the forest with you, because Ram actually tells Sita Mata that the forest is full of dangerous animals, plus you will have to, there might be so many thorns, and you being a princess, like in those days, princesses were brought up very opulently. They would never have to walk on the ground, so they would have never put their feet on the ground for walking. They would always be carried in a palanquin. So with so much opulence they are brought up. And Ram tells Sita that you might have to walk on thorns. There might be pebbles, there might be so many things which might hurt your feet. And also there might be roots and berries that you might have to just survive on. There might not even be proper food in the forest. So Sita Mata says that because you will be by my side, the forest will become like Ayodhya for me. Because you are there, it will become a place of opulence. But if I stay back in Ayodhya, even though all these opulences will be there, I will be suffering in separation from you, and it will become like a forest for me. So in the same way, even Lakshman gives all these arguments, and Ram had to ultimately take Sita and Lakshman with him to the forest. So this shows that how, you know, Sita had this power of chastity and purity. How she was attached to her husband, and she kept her husband's goals in mind, and she always supported her husband through thick and thin. She never gave up her husband's side, even though her husband had to go through so many trials and tribulations later on. So it is mentioned in the scriptures that just by being chaste, And we are talking about the quality of chastity of Sita Mata, because she is considered to be the most chaste person in this world. There are few ladies who fall in this category. There is Sita Mata who falls in this category of being one of the most chaste ladies. Draupadi falls in this category of being very chaste. Mandodari, who is the wife of Ravana. So even though she is the wife of a demon, she is actually considered at par with Sita Mata, Draupadi and all in her chastity, because she was always very chaste to her husband. So it is said that just by chastity, by being loyal, even if a person is not Krishna conscious, he can actually reach Brahma Loka. That is what is mentioned in the scriptures, just by being chaste and loyal. And what to speak of a person who actually is Krishna conscious plus is chaste and loyal. For such a person, then the doors of Golok Vrindavan open up, the doors of Vaikuntha planets open up. So Sita Mata was such an epitome of chastity, and she was always grateful. She was never angry with Ram for putting her through all these trials and tribulations. She just kept tolerating. So in fact, there is a very nice conversation between Sita and Hanuman also, which again, you know, bring out Sita Mata's quality of chastity. So when Hanuman has discovered Sita, like Hanuman was the only one who could go across the ocean, and he discovered Sita in Ashok Vatika. So he at that time tells Sita Mata, he tells that, see, now I have come and you immediately climb on my shoulder and I will straight away take you and reunite you with your Lord. But Sita Mata at that time says that with Ravan I had no choice. I was forcibly brought by her. So he touched me, but I had no choice and I had to go with her because I could not protect myself, or I could not wean away from Ravan. But here I have a choice. So if I come now with you, then my chastity is at stake, because I am married to Lord Ram and I cannot touch anybody else. So even though Hanuman, you are like my son, but I will not willingly climb on your shoulder. So it was actually a very lucrative offer if you see from a material perspective. Sita Mata was being tormented by Ravana in Ashok Vatika. He was continuously, he had kept actually some Rakshasis over there who used to continuously torment Sita. And every day Ravana would come and some tricks he would play on her, something he would do to torment her and try to make her his wife. So there was so much suffering Sita Mata was going through. And Hanuman was giving her that offer that come with me and I will straight away reunite you with your Lord. But again, to just uphold her chastity, Sita Mata refused. And obviously she was a Kshatrani also. So she said that no, I'm the wife of a Kshatriya. He has to come and fight and he has to then obtain me back from Ravana. So I will wait for my Lord Ram to come and fight for me and get me back from Ravana. So that was a Kshatrani blood also speaking. So one more epitome of chastity which is talked about in Ramayana is also known as Anasuya. So in fact, it is mentioned that when Sita Mata was in Chitrakoot, she goes to take association of Anasuya in Atri Muni's ashram. And Anasuya is also considered a very chaste person, a very chaste lady. Her name is also counted among the greatest women in our scriptures. So when she goes to meet him, Sita Mata is so humble. She is actually the goddess of fortune herself. But she pays obeisances to Anasuya and she tries to get some instructions from her. And looking at Sita Mata's good qualities, Anasuya gives her two gifts. She gives her ornaments to wear. And she says that when you wear these ornaments, you will always be fresh and cheerful. You will look always nice when you wear these ornaments. And the second gift which Anasuya gives is her own Angavastram. So she says that keep this Angavastram on you always, because you are living in the forest now. Sometimes there might not be food to eat. For days you might have to go without food if you are passing through a section of forest where there are not even fruits or roots or berries to eat. But this Angavastram will actually protect you from the pangs of hunger. It will protect you from the pain and suffering a person has to go through if that person is very hungry. So this will protect you from that. And therefore we see that when Sita Mata was under the control of Ravan, when she was captured by Ravan and she was in Ashok Vatika, she did not eat anything. She refused to eat when she was there for 1 year under Ravana's capture. And still she did not dwindle or she did not become emaciated just because the Angavastram was of Anasuya Mata was there on her shoulders. So that protected her from becoming emaciated or from dwindling because of hunger. So after Lord Ram actually comes and wins over, and then Sita Mata is brought by Lakshman and Sugriva, like all these, and Hanuman, they bring Sita Mata back to Lord Ram. Lord Ram actually tells Sita Mata and he rejects her. And he tells Lakshman that now I have won her, but now you do whatever she wants, you want with her, because she has been with another man, so I cannot accept her back. And then Sita Mata, now again we see over here one quality of Sita Mata. She always used to align herself with the ideals of her husband, because that is one of the qualities of chastity. So if your husband's ideals are, now Lord Ram is called as Maryada Purushottam. He had come to actually establish the highest ideals in human society. So he came here and he acted as the ideal son by being obedient to his father's instructions. He was also the ideal husband to Sita Mata. And to establish that Sita was the ideal wife, he wanted to do that pariksha for her or that test for her. And Sita Mata did not start lamenting like normally people would. You know, you have suffered for 1 year. You actually thought of no one else but your worshipable Lord. And after all the trials and tribulations you go through, your husband talks like this about you, that now I'm rejecting you because you have... And you would say, what? I suffered so much for you and now you're doing like this to me? But no, Sita Mata did not do that. She immediately told Lakshman that you create a pyre of fire and light the fire and I'm going to enter that fire. And if even for a moment... in my heart there had been any thought of Lord of anybody else apart from Lord Ram, immediately the fire will consume me and I will die. So not even for a moment there was any thoughts in my mind but for Lord Ram, and let me prove this by entering the fire. So it is mentioned over there that all the ladies who were present over there, they started wailing because they did not want to see Sita Mata go through all this. And even Lakshman, even Sugriv, Hanuman, they were all shocked why Lord Ram is subjecting Sita Mata through this. But still she agreed to go through this test. So she went into the pyre and then Agnidev himself brought out Sita Mata and gave her back to Lord Ram. And it is mentioned that when Lakshman had cut Shurpanakhan's nose, Lord Ram knew that, you know, a lady who has been angered like this and who has been insulted is not going to lie low. So he knew that Shurpanakha is going to create trouble in the future for them. So at that point in time, it is mentioned in the Ramayana that Lord Ram takes Sita Mata to a place in Nasik called Tapovanam, in the forest where they were living. And he actually hands her over to Agnidev in that place called Tapovanam. And he tells Agnidev to look after Sita Mata, and Agnidev gives at that time Chaya Sita to Lord Ram. So this was the Chaya Sita which was actually kidnapped by Ravana. It was not actual Sita, because the real Sita can never be touched by anybody else apart from Lord Ram. So when this Agni Pariksha was done, and when Sita Mata enters this fire, Agnidev comes out and he gives the real Sita back to Lord Ram. The Chaya Sita goes away in that fire, and he tells Lord Ram that your wife is completely chaste and pure. She has not done anything wrong, so you can accept her back. And similar test Sita Mata had to go through when she had gone back to the kingdom and they were living nicely. Ram was coronated as the king. She was the queen of Ayodhya. But Ram used to send spies all over Ayodhya. Not spies just to, you know, for political purposes, but even spies who would go and gather information for Lord Ram, who would actually mingle among citizens and who would try to find out what the citizens are thinking about Lord Ram's rule. Whether the citizens are happy, is there anything which I can improve on? That's what Lord Ram's mood was when he used to send these spies. So one of the spies came back and told Lord Ram that there is a washerman who was speaking to his wife. His wife had been with another man, it seems, for a night or something. And the washerman says he was actually angrily rebuking his wife. And he tells his wife that I am not Ram, that I will accept you back even though you lived with another man and came. I am going to reject you. Don't think that I am as magnanimous as Lord Ram. So when Lord Ram heard this from this spy, he immediately realized that his citizens are now talking like this. They feel that he has not done the right thing by accepting Sita Mata back. So once again, to also establish that he is an ideal king or an ideal ruler, he sends Sita Mata with Lakshman. And he tells Lakshman that you go and drop her off at Valmiki Muni's ashram. And Lakshman was in tears at that time. And Sita Mata thought, because she was pregnant also at that time, so she thought that, oh, it's such a good opportunity to go and associate with the sages, to get blessings, to hear from the sages. So she was happily going with Lakshman on the chariot. But she saw Lakshman was continuously crying. So she then realized something is wrong, because Lakshman had not told her that you're not just going to visit the sages, but you're going to be, you're being sent away forever. And then he reveals this to Sita when she asks why he was crying. But once again we see over here that Sita Mata was, she was obviously in tears because now she would be in separation of Lord Ram. But she again was telling Lakshman that it's okay, whatever my Lord desires, I'm happy to align myself with whatever he desires. So we see that Sita Mata, actually Prabhupada says that Sita Mata is non-different from Radharani. And we see that she's actually emblem of the last verse of Shikshashtakam. Aslishyava Padaratam, that verse, where, that verse is actually spoken by Radharani, where it says that you can embrace me as you want, or you can make me broken hearted by not being present before me. But you will be my worshipful Lord always. So that is what Sita Mata is actually showing us by her actions. So even though Lord Ram is breaking her heart by doubting her chastity and purity and by sending her away, but still Sita Mata is saying that it's okay. If this is what my Lord desires, I will align myself. I will actually follow the instructions of my Lord. So Lakshman, you please drop me over at Valmiki Muni's ashram. So these are some of the qualities we see over here of Sita Mata. And then ultimately the whole pastime is there of how Lav and Kush come and sing the Ramayan in Ram's kingdom. And then, you know, Sita Mata is also brought. They realize that these are my children. Lord Ram realizes these are my children. And then Sita Mata is also brought back along with Lav and Kush to stay in the kingdom. But Sita Mata actually at that time says, he tells Bhumi Devi, he says that even because I was sent away like this, because I had spent some time with another man, that too forcibly against my will. So, hey Bhumi Devi, if you feel that, you know, I'm still pure and chaste, please accept me in your shelter. And in front of everyone, because she had appeared from earth, she was the daughter of Bhumi Devi. In front of everyone, there was a huge crack, like an earthquake that happened. And the entire earth split. And through that crack, Bhumi Devi appeared, sitting on a beautiful celestial throne, which was made of celestial snakes. And then she invites Sita Mata to sit next to her. And then the entire throne descends back into the earth and the crack closes. So that is how Sita Mata's leaving, like, you know, she winds up her pastimes and she goes. But while she was away, when she was in Valmiki Muni's ashram, because Lord Ram was an Ekapati Pativrata, he also was very chaste. So he always used to make a golden murti of Sita whenever he had to perform any sacrifices. And even after Sita Mata went away in the earth, Lord Ram continued to rule the kingdom for 13,000 years. So every year when he used to perform a sacrifice, he would make a murti of Sita, because he never married again, but there has to be a wife in when your Kshatriya Grahastha performs a sacrifice. So he used to make this golden statue of Sita Mata, and he used to keep that statue next to him when he used to perform these yagyas. So when Sita Mata ultimately meets him in the spiritual world, she tells him, she says that all these Chaya Sitas that you created, you know, to perform the pastimes, they are also actually all persons. Because obviously Pran Pratishtha was done, life was infused in these Chaya Sitas. So Sita Mata says that show your mercy to all these Chaya Sitas as well. And then Lord Ram shows his mercy, and all these Chaya Sitas, which were accumulated over 13,000 years, he gives them an opportunity to become gopis. And these gopis take part in Krishna's Rasleela in their next lifetime. So it is said that there are many types of gopis. The, you know, when Lord Ram was traveling through Dandakaranya forest, there were lots of rishis who get attracted to Lord Ram. But Lord Ram says that in this lifetime I'm only Ekapatni Vrata, but in my next lifetime you all can come and enjoy with me in my next incarnation. So there are some gopis which are called as rishi gopis, which were these sages of Dandakaranya. Then the Vedas also, personified Vedas also wanted to enjoy with Krishna. So they has actually come as Shruti Gopis. So like that, there are different types of Gopis. And one of the categories was these Chaya Sitas, who on the request of Sita Mata became Gopis and they could enjoy with Krishna. So these were some of the qualities of Sita Mata. And we'll quickly spend 5-5 minutes on Madhu Pandit and Janva Mata. So it is the disappearance day of Madhu Pandit today. Madhu Pandit was a close associate of Lord Chaitanya. He was an intimate associate of Lord Chaitanya. And in the spiritual world, Madhu Pandit is called as Mandali Sakhi. His original constitutional position is Mandali Sakhi, and he's the servant or an intimate associate of Champakalata Sakhi. So all the Ashta Sakhis, the eight main Sakhis of Radharani and Krishna, they have their own set of Gopis and Sakhis and Manjaris who assist them in their pastimes. So Mandali Sakhi, like Madhu Pandit, who is Mandali Sakhi, is actually a servant of Champaklata Sakhi. And Champaklata Sakhi, it seems, is an expert cook. Amongst her many, many other good qualities, her main service is that she's an expert cook. So she cooks for Krishna. And Madhu Pandit, as Mandali Sakhi, usually associates and assists her in the cooking service for Lord Krishna and Radharani. So Madhu Pandit was a disciple of Gadadhar Pandit. And he had a god brother by the name of Paramananda Bhattacharya. And both of them were elevated Vaishnavas. And they were always crying in separation of Lord Gopinath. So after Lord Krishna departed from this world, his great grandson Vajranab had actually got three deities carved. And out of these three deities which he carved, one of the deities was Lord Gopinath. So the face of that deity exactly matched with Krishna's face. And therefore he was called as Gopinath. And Vajranab actually installed the worship of Gopinath in Vrindavan when he was present. But over the years, the deity got lost. So Madhu Pandit and his godbrother Paramananda Bhattacharya used to actually roam around in Vrindavan looking for deity, for the deity of Gopinath. And they used to always cry in separation of Gopinath. And then it is mentioned that once they were on the banks of, in Vamsivat, on the banks of Yamuna river, and over there Gopinath gave them darshan in his threefold bending form. And then actually he gave darshan to Paramananda Bhattacharya, and then Paramananda Bhattacharya gifted that deity to Madhu Pandit. So even in the song which we sing, it says that Madhu Pandit Pranadhanare, when we say Radha Gopinath, like that. So then Madhu Pandit installs that deity in Vrindavan in Gopinath Bazaar. And if we see that temple in Gopinath Bazaar, Madhu Pandit Samadhi is still over there. But the deity was obviously transferred during the Mughal rule in 1739. It is said that the deity was transferred to Jaipur. So Madhu Pandit worshipped the deity very nicely. He established very good standards of worship. And then when he gave up his body, his samadhi was also made in that same temple. So Indradyumna Maharaj tells a very nice pastime, an intimate pastime which he had with Gopinath deity and with Madhu Pandit. So Indradyumna Maharaj had read that when in 1739 Gopinath was transferred actually to Jaipur, there was a life-size coat made of small intricate tulsi beads. And this coat was used by Madhu Pandit in his life. He used to wear that coat, which was entirely made of tulsi beads. So it was a beautifully cowed coat. And it seems this coat was also transferred to Jaipur along with the deity of Gopinath in 1739. Until 1902, the coat was always lying in a box. It was never taken out. But in 1902, the Goswamis who were worshipping Gopinath deity, they actually took the coat out and they put it in a glass cabinet. And now it was available for darshan and display for the devotees who would visit Gopinath temple in Jaipur. So Indradyumna Maharaj had heard about this and he had read about this. So he went to Jaipur with the hope of getting darshan of the coat, and he also wanted to get some maha. You know, Indradyumna Maharaj was greedy for the maha of that coat. So when he goes there, he takes darshan of the coat, and it seems the cabinet had never been opened. But fortunately, the key was there, which was there since 1902. That was, you know, still opened the glass cabinet. So he opened the cabinet and he, you know, took some tulsi beads which had fallen down. And then the Goswami was very impressed that someone has just come all the way to take darshan of this coat. So the Goswami asks Indradyumna Maharaj, "Who are you?" And Indradyumna Maharaj says that, "Oh, I am, which sampradaya do you belong to?" he asks. And Indradyumna Maharaj says that, "I belong to the International Society of Krishna Consciousness." And the Goswami over there, he becomes so impressed. He says that your Guru Srila Prabhupada, he has established Bhakti, Gaudiya Vaishnavism, so nicely all over the world. So this coat, why do you have to just take some maha? This entire coat belongs to you. You please take the entire coat and go. He was so pleased with Srila Prabhupada and with Indradyumna Maharaj that he wanted to give the whole coat to him. But Indradyumna Maharaj said, he said, "No, no, no, I don't want the whole coat. This coat actually rightly belongs in this temple. And whenever devotees come to take darshan of Gopinath and they hear about Madhu Pandit's glories, they can actually take darshan of this coat as well. So let it always remain over here. I have taken some maha tulsi beads which had fallen off the coat. So I'm very happy with that." And then Indradyumna Maharaj offers that, "I will actually get a glass cabinet made which has temperature and humidity control. I will sponsor that so that the coat can stay protected for thousands of years and devotees can keep taking darshan of the coat. So next time any of us go to Jaipur, we might be able to see that cabinet which Indradyumna Maharaj has donated for keeping the coat intact." So So these were some of the pastimes of Madhu Pandit, and we'll now talk about Janva Mata. So Janva Mata, her appearance day is today. Janva Mata is the wife of Lord Nityananda. So she is not only famous as the wife of Lord Nityananda, but she is famous in her own right as a great acharya of Gaudiya Vaishnavism. So she herself established so much worship. She herself was such a nice devotee that she has her own, people know her as a great acharya. She in fact was an initiating guru as well. Many of the great personalities we know in Gaudiya Vaishnavism were actually disciples of Janva Mata. So she is well known as a great acharya in her own right. And in the Gaur Ganodesh Dipika, Kavi Karnapur describes that Janva Mata is actually an incarnation of Ananga Manjari. So Ananga Manjari is the sister of Radharani and also Sridhama. And it is said that Ananga Manjari is actually an expansion of Lord Balaram. So Balaram, we know, he expands in every rasa. To serve Krishna, he expands in every rasa. So to serve Krishna in the Shringa ras, Balaram expands as Ananga Manjari. And in that particular mood, he serves Lord Krishna. So Ananga Manjari actually incarnated as two. She incarnated as Janva Mata, and Janva Mata had a sister called Vasudha. So she incarnated, she had two incarnations in this material world. It is also mentioned that Janva Mata was an incarnation also of Revati. Revati, who is the eternal wife of Lord Balaram. And it is also mentioned that Vasudha originally is actually Varuni, who is Balaram's second wife in the spiritual world. So Varuni is the daughter of Varuna. And she actually comes as a sticky substance which oozes out, the nectar which oozes out of trees to serve Lord Balaram by becoming the Varuni drink which then comes out of the trees. So these are some of the, how we understand what these personalities are in the original spiritual world. So Janava Mata, their father's name was Suryadas Sarkhel. He was actually the treasurer of the king at that time. And it is described how, you know, the marriage of Lord Nityananda to Janava Mata and Vasudha is very beautifully described in the Nityanand Charitamrita. So there was a Brahmin who approaches Suryadas Sarakhel and tells him that you should give your daughter in marriage, Janava, to Lord Nityananda. So initially Suryadas Sarakhel refuses, and then he starts repenting because he used to have dreams where he sees Lord Nityananda and he sees both his daughters on either side of Lord Nityananda. And he realizes this through his dreams that my daughters are eternally meant to be married to Lord Nityananda. But somehow he refused that Brahmin, then he repents. And when Janva Mata comes to know that my father has refused my proposal with Nityananda, she actually faints. Because in her heart she had just accepted Lord Nityananda as her husband. So she faints, and then Lord Nityananda is brought over there to solve the situation, because Janva Mata had fainted and she was not coming back to consciousness. The doctors had actually said it's some kind of epilepsy which has taken over her. So as soon as Lord Nityananda arrives, just by the fragrance of his body, Janva Mata regains her consciousness. And then she gets up and she realizes that she was on the floor and Lord Nityananda is there. So she shyly runs away inside. And then it is described that how with great pomp the marriage ceremony was performed of Lord Nityananda and Janva Mata. And after marriage, when Janava Mata was serving Lord Nityananda, her sister Vasudha was also helping Janava Mata in serving Lord Nityananda. And it is said that when Vasudha was bringing some prasadam to serve Lord Nityananda, her sari was going to fall off her head. So she suddenly, because she was holding something in her hand, she suddenly manifested two more arms from her shoulders just to bring her sari back on her head. And Lord Nityananda saw this. It happened in front of everyone. So he caught hold of Vasudha's hand, and then the marriage of Lord Nityananda with Vasudha also took place, because she is actually the eternal consort of Lord Nityananda as Lord Balaram. So after the marriage with Vasudha, Vasudha gave birth to two children. And Lord Chaitanya had promised Lord Nityananda that when you get married, I will come as your son. So, and this nobody knew, only Lord Nityananda and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu knew. So when Vasudha gave birth to a son, his name was Veerabhadra, Lord Nityananda immediately realized, looking at Veerabhadra, that this is an incarnation of the effulgence of Lord Chaitanya. And she also gave birth to a daughter whose name was Ganga Devi. But Vasudha died at a very young age. So then it fell upon Janva Mata to bring up all the children. Like, you know, we see Kunti Maharani brought up all the children in Mahabharata. So in the same way, Janva Mata brought up these two children of Vasudha. And she also adopted one son of her own, whose name was Ramachandra. So it is mentioned that her entire life, especially her young life, was just spent in bringing up these children. In, you know, proper Krishna consciousness and devotional mood. And then once she had retired from her duties, then she actually started traveling and she actually started preaching Krishna consciousness. So she was, because of her super excellent qualities, wherever she traveled, like after her children had settled and she started traveling, she was also always accepted as the leader of Vaishnavas. Wherever she traveled, whether it was Bengal, whether it was Puri, or whether it was in Vrindavan. In fact, it is very rare to see a deity of a person made even when that person is alive. So it seems when Janva Mata had traveled to Jaipur to take darshan of the same Gopinath deity. So that is how Madhu Pandit and Janva Mata are closely, the pastimes are intimately associated, because Madhu Pandit had installed Gopinath deity and Janva Mata goes to take darshan of Gopinath deity because she was very devoted to Gopinath. So at that time, the king does a council with all the Vaishnavas, prominent Vaishnavas of Jaipur. And they all unanimously agree to make a deity of Janva Mata, even though she's still present on the planet, and install that deity next to Gopinath. And it is mentioned in the scriptures that when Janva Mata left the world, she actually merged into that deity of Gopinath. That is how she left the world. So Janva Mata, it is mentioned that she initiated many prominent personalities. And she gave mercy to so many Goswamis when she used to travel in Vrindavan, to Jiva Goswami, Gopal Bhatta Goswami, so many Goswami, Bhugarbha Goswami. She gave mercy to all these Goswamis. And it is mentioned that Janva Mata was a key instrument in uniting the different Gaudiya Vaishnava Goswamis from Vrindavan, Puri and Bengal, from Navadvip. So today when we see that all the Gaudiya Vaishnavas are working very cohesively, very cooperatively in Vrindavan or in Bengal or in Puri, there is no friction or there is no, you know, who is superior, who is the head and all that. The whole credit goes to Janva Mata. Because she worked tirelessly to bring about these cooperative relationships amongst all the Gaudiya Vaishnavas who were living in different places. And Bhakti Vinod Thakur used to glorify Janva Mata a lot. He was very, very devoted to Janva Mata and he always used to preach about the glories of Janva Mata. So in his book called Kalyana Kalpataru, he glorifies Janva Mata. And I'll just read out his short prayer because that brings out the mood of Bhakti Vinod Thakur. He says, O Janava, by power of your divine qualities, be merciful to this servant of yours. Dispel this illusion which torments me and release me from material existence. Let me take shelter of your lotus feet. Because you are the power of Nityananda. You are Nityananda Shakti. You are Nityananda Swarupini, the Guru of Krishna Bhakti. Grant me the shade of your lotus feet, which are like desire trees. Deliver me like you have delivered countless sinners. Thus, this lowly servant of yours, Bhakti Vinod, falls at your lotus feet. So this is the prayer which Bhakti Vinod Thakur does. And we can meditate on this prayer of Janva Mata. So there are many, many pastimes of Janva Mata, but obviously there's shortage of time. So we'll just end the class with this meditation of prayer, Bhakti Vinod Thakur's prayer about Janva Mata. Hare Krishna, Shri Janva Mata ki,
Jai.
Sita Mata ki,
Jai.
Madhu Pandit Goswami ki.
Jai.
Did anyone have any questions, quick questions or comments or any corrections? How did? It's not mentioned, Prabhuji, so I'm not aware, sorry. Why do we see? Why don't we see? Huh? That's a very good question, Prabhuji. Even I had that question in mind. The question is, why don't we see today Matajis being initiating gurus in ISKCON? And this topic has been brought up many times, and I believe the GBC is Working on this, like there are some, you know, there is a committee which is working on this. So it's beyond me to explain what are GBC's rules and ISKCON's rules. But I believe they are working on this and they might be allowing Matajis to give initiations as well. Yes, Prabhuji.
Why is it that Yamaraj gives demoniac people so hard punishment that this punishment actually cannot remove the desires? Like, why is it like that?
Why does Yamaraj give punishment even when the desire for sinning doesn't go away? Then what is the use of all this punishment? So there are two aspects in punishment, Prabhuji, from what I understand of, you know, whatever Kapila Dev is talking to Devahuti. And we can try and understand this from everyday, day-to-day examples of our life. Now, for example, when a child does something wrong, so there are two things the mother does. First of all, the child has to be punished for what they have done wrong, so that they know that they have been punished for these activities, for whatever wrong activities they have done. So there is some mild punishment which the mother might give to the child. And after that, the mother might also sit and educate the child that now, you know, you should not do like this because, you know, and then the mother might maybe tell them some stories which might make the child value that, yes, I have to follow these values and I should not be doing these wrong things. Let's say the child stole something. So first of all, the punishment is given, because if the punishment is not given, then the impetus to keep doing that sin will, you know, keep going on. So therefore, even if we see over here, like in the material world also, when, you know, people are punished and sent to jails, so the government knows that some of them might actually come back and they might be repeat offenders and all that. So first they are punished for the wrong activity they have done, because it also sets an example for others. Now when we are reading this in the scriptures and when we try to, you know, even preach this, if somebody is talking about this, what is mentioned in the scriptures, that if you do this wrong activity, then this is the punishment that is awaiting you. So it is through the examples of others, at least, you know, people will learn that I should not do these activities because this is the fate that awaits me. So that is one purpose why Yamaraj does that, because now it is mentioned in the scriptures and it is there for others to follow. That if I do this, this is the destination. If I do good karma, I get heavenly planets. But if I do bad karma, then these are the punishments that await me. So the purpose of scriptures and the purpose of these things being mentioned in scriptures and why Yamaraj gives is to not only teach lesson to the sinner, but also to set an example for others to follow. But then at the same time, like, you know, in fact, Yamaraj himself repents. During Ajamil's pastime, it is mentioned, like when Ajamil is taken away by the Vishnu Dutas and the Yamadutas come empty-handed to Yamaraj. So that time it is mentioned that Yamaraj actually repents for his position, that he has to always mete out these punishments. And he actually over there says that I yearn to listen to the glories of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So Lord Krishna has twofold management system, so to call management system in this world. He has Yamaraj being appointed who will mete out this punishment so that people who did the activity learn a lesson, plus others will not do that activity thinking, oh, I don't want this destination. But then he also, like we discussed, he sends his books, his representatives, he himself comes then to teach us the glories of bhakti and to uproot that sinning tendency. So the purpose is twofold. Thank you. Okay, we'll end the class here. Granthraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki.